Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming. We are in our study of, or overview of, end times. We're going to look at Matthew tonight, finish looking at Matthew, and then go to Luke. And we're just making comparisons between what we see in Daniel, Matthew, Luke's writings, Paul's writings, and then eventually John's writings in Revelation. And it may get monotonous, it may get boring, and it probably should, in the sense that you should start seeing things repeating. Whatever Daniel lays out, it should be said again in Matthew, and it kind of cycles through. And there should be similarities. If they're all drastically different, then, you know, they may not be connected. But if we can find a pattern of where they're kind of repeating, that's what we're looking for. And you can be the judge of that. But I do want to point out something that we came across last week, just in Daniel 7:25, where it's, you know, pretty clear we're talking about this king that will come, the Antichrist. In Daniel chapter 7, verse 25, it says, well, in verse 24, it says, "The ten horns are ten kings who will come from this kingdom. After them, another king will arise, different from the earlier ones. He will subdue three kings. He will speak against the Most High," coming against God, "and oppress the saints," and try to change the set times and laws. The saints, that, you know, that's the holy ones, "will be handed over to him for times and a half a time." And that's going to be repeated throughout Matthew's teaching, Paul's teaching, and in Revelation, that the saints are going to be handed over, persecuted, the sword, it will be, you know, persecution of the saints. And notice it is a time, times and a half a time, or 3.5 years. That would correlate with if we have a 70th week, or the last 7 years right here, this would correlate with the saints, the holy ones, the believers, being persecuted for the first 3.5 years. When we go to Revelation, and we did this last week, and we're not going to spend much time here, but in Revelation chapter 12, it appears to be talking about after the sealing of the 144,000, and after a great multitude has been taken out of the earth in chapter 7, in chapter 12, there's a vision, a mega sign, or a wondrous sign, a great sign appeared, and John records it, and involves a dragon that's, you know, sweeping a third of the stars out of the sky, and it's pursuing the woman. And the woman is going to be taken to a desert where she'll be for 1,260 days. That's in verse 12, chapter 12, verse 6. "The woman fled to the desert to a place prepared for her by God where she might be taken care of for 1,260 days. So there you've got Satan, who is manifesting in the Antichrist and his agenda during this time period. 1,260 days, which ends up being, you know, three and a half years, if you do it this way. And when you continue into the chapter, and you get to chapter 12 in verse 14, I'll begin in verse 13. "When the dragon saw that he had been hurled to the earth," that'd be the dragon, Satan, hurled to the earth, "he pursued the woman," so he's pursuing the woman who had given birth to the male child, and in the illustration here, the woman would be Israel, who gave birth to the male child, the promised seed, the seed promised of the woman. "The woman was given the two wings of a great eagle," whatever that would refer to, we're not sure, "so that she might fly to a place prepared for her in the desert," and in the desert where she would be taken care of for a time, times, and half a time. It repeats that time again, what we just mentioned, she's being taken care of. She, the woman, which is not the saints, this would be Israel, and Israel is going to be taken care of for a times, time, and half a time. That would correlate exactly with what we see in the 70th week, that Israel is going to recognize their Messiah and be sealed and be protected during the wrath of God that is being poured out at this time. But during the first 3.5, the saints will be handed over to be persecuted. And that's recorded in Paul's writings, Matthew's writings, throughout this. So there you've got your two breaks, time, times, and half a time. This is where the saints are persecuted. This is the rapture, the church is removed. Now Israel recognizes their Messiah when the sign of the Son of Man appears, and they've got a times, time and half a times, or 3.5 years, where they're going to be protected as they're sealed. So either these are the first and second half of the 70th week, or somehow you've got to make these equal, that while the saints are being handed over to the Antichrist, she, whoever she is, maybe Israel, maybe the church, is being protected from the Antichrist, which, of course, that would be doesn't equal. So again, that's just something interesting to look at, and that's one of the things that will consistently be seen is going to be the persecution of the believers of the church because of Jesus' name, and then the Jews recognizing their Messiah throughout all the prophets. The Jews recognize, and they are brought back in the end times. That's in Hosea throughout all the prophets. Go to Matthew 24, and we'll pick this up. Any comments about that? Thoughts about that? Just an interesting repetition of the times, times, and half a time. But in one case, it's persecution. The other half, it's protection. Matthew 24, we read through part of this last week. In Matthew 24, you've got the three questions that the disciples ask that Jesus, we assume, since it's in the text, that he's replying to it. It'd be kind of, Matthew could have done whatever he wanted to. God can write what he'd want. But it seemed like if you write it in the text, the three questions, what's going to follow is some kind of an answer broken down. So the three questions, Matthew 24, the disciples said to Jesus, after he had told them, there will not be one stone left upon another on this temple mount. It'll basically be raised. It'll be torn down. They said, tell us, they said, when will this happen? So when? That's going to play into our discussion tonight. When will this happen? And that is, when will not one stone be left upon another? The answer I would give is 70 AD, and that's what I'm going to assume, and that's where I'm aiming this towards. When is this going to happen? It's going to be 70 AD, and Jesus is going to talk about that in Matthew and in Luke, particularly in Luke. What will be the sign of your coming? Sign, and what is the sign for? It's the coming of the Lord. So when is it's the second coming? It's going to be the future. This is going to be answered here with the sign of the Son of Man. And that's going to be like lightning from the east to the west. Everyone will see it. It will be obvious. And that is in the future, the sign of his coming. It's not going to be secret. It's going to be obvious. And of the end of the age. When is the end of a sign of the end of the age? When will the age end? And again, that would be, we would think that would be when before the kingdom is set up. What's going to end this age so we go into the kingdom? You could consider what would be the end of the Old Testament, the Old Covenant, and the beginning of the New Covenant. So the end of the age, if you're tying this in with the sign, it would be the same time frame. When he appears, that's he's coming and things are going to take place, and then there's going to be the age. If it's the ending of the Old Covenant or the Old Testament, it would tie up into this area here. So that would be left open. So here we go. Very quickly reading through the chapter 24, and we're going to start making comments again right around where we left off last week, talking about what spoken by the prophet Daniel, the abomination that causes desolation. And Daniel referred to that, and remember, we've got a couple events in history that are going to be have to be considered. We're going to have 165 or 168 right during this time period, B.C., the Maccabean Revolt, when Antiochus Epiphanes comes in, desecrates the temple, shuts it down, offers pig's blood, sets up basically the abomination of desolation, his own image, a statue in the temple mount, or in the temple on the temple mount. Then 70 A.D., the fall of Jerusalem in 70 A.D., which is going to be very detailed. That's when not one stone will be left upon another. So there's going to be those events. And then we've got the rest of history, just a wide variety of events that takes place, including 135, the Bar Kokhba Revolt. I just found this out this week, and this should be known. I just found it out. But Bar Kokhba was the one who led a rebellion. Bar, son of, that was Bar means son of, Kokhba means the star, son of the star. And so he, in 135, what's interesting, the Jews had rebuilt after the 70 AD destruction. They'd come back, they'd rebuilt to such a force that they could rebel a second time against the Roman Empire, and they did, and left a mark. I mean, it took them a while. But Bar Kokhba was the one the Jews recognized as their deliverer, their Messiah. So what they rejected in 30 A.D. when Jesus came, they thought they had it in 70 A.D. They tried to get it in 135. So when it says, do not be deceived about many messiahs, many will come, the nation is going to look for their Messiah. After rejecting Jesus, they've been looking for some Messiah. Anyway, Bar Kokhba, I just found this out this week as I was reading some things. In a cave a few years ago, they actually found the remains of letters written by him. I mean, the actual papyri of his writing, of a letter that he had sent during the Bar Kokhba revolt. And it's got his name on it, his handwriting. So it's a letter from 135 from Bar Kokhba himself, which, again, that's not a new discovery. That's just a new realization that I came across. That's just... This would be... Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yes, that's AD. That's... Yes. AD. Yep. Thank you for making that correction. Yes. Yes. Stop me. If I say something, you know, I get going, I start just miss, you know, when Paul was resurrected, you know, or something like that. Or okay. Here we go. Here's his answer. He begins in verse 4, watch out that no one deceives you. We always start prophecy with that. For many will come in my name claiming I am the Christ. And Bar Kokhba would be one of the examples of that. Many will come in my name claiming I am the Christ and will deceive many. Whenever they're deceived, it always leads to destruction. 70 AD, 135. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. So in other words, this he tells you right up front. There's going to be deceivers that are going to come. Maybe they have misunderstanding. They don't understand fully what the Messiah is going to do. But they come, they deceive people and causes destruction. And there's going to be many things happen like this. But understand, it's got to happen. This is not the end. So he already said 70 AD is not the end. 130, now he's not using these numbers, but he's talking about these events. These things are going to happen. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. This is not the end. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. Now, as you read this, are we talking about are we talking about just history in general? Or are we talking about, you know, the opening of the seals? It does correlate with the opening of the seals. If this is just history as general, then it has nothing to do with the seals on a special level. This is just the way it's going to be for the next 2,000 years. But if it partakes to or the seals repeat it, then it would indicate that the seals are just basically history being unleashed to get to the point of the end. Do you understand what I just said? It would mean the seals are not the wrath of God. The seals are just the final phase of history to get to this place. Meaning this is going to just keep cycling through. There's going to be wars and rumors of wars. It's repeating over and over. But all of a sudden, they open the seals. What is this? This is the final of the wars. The final of the national revolts. This is the final plagues coming before the rapture, and then comes the wrath of God. So in other words, it just really would take the seals and move them into the category of just being normal history, except it will be the end of history, end of the typical temporal period. But anyway, it says nation will, and Luke is going to say the same thing, except very clearly. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pains. So the beginning of birth pains began potentially in 30 AD or 70 AD. They began, history has been the beginning of the birth pains, and it just keeps, like labor pains, it just keeps coming and cycling and coming through until finally the seals are broken and it's time for the wrath. Otherwise, we're not, you know, it's not like, oh, this must be the beginning of the birth pains. The birth pains may have began way back in 30 AD. When did Satan start trying to set up the Antichrist? Way back in 30 AD. I mean, he's been trying to get this thing to roll, but something's holding it back. Verse 9, then you'll be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you'll be hated by all nations because of me. Now again, is he talking about the Jews? Now he's talking to the disciples, and the question would be, is he talking to the Jews or the Jewish disciples who are believers, referring to then the church or believers? So here it is. Then you, either the Jews or the believers, will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you'll be hated by all nations. And here's, I think, opens the answers the question, because of me. Now, the Jews are not hated because of Jesus Christ. They're hated because of maybe the promise. They're, you know, they've got the promise. If you know, spiritually, Satan's against the Jews. It says, at that time, many will turn away from the faith and betray and hate each other, and many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Now, are we in to see how that kind of, which way could that go? Is that going to be just the, is that going to be the disciples during this period between 30 A.D. and up until, you know, John? Is that that period of time going through 70 A.D.? Is it the disciples or the believers? Or is it the Jews as a nation? And when we get into Luke, we're going to see that it is clearly referring to the believers, I think. But at the same time, as you read this, you can see how this can slip back and forth. It can be the believers who are hated because of Jesus, but also it seems to slip into some very clear end-time events as he's talking about this. So is this, I don't want to say double talk, but is this talking about two different events, or are the events, the timing, going to be very similar? Will these days right here, the first days of the church, how the disciples were treated, be very similar to the final 3.5 years before the rapture? Anyway, here it is. At that time, many will turn away from the faith, and we know that's going to be repeated consistently, and will betray and hate each other. And many false prophets will appear, and we always want to tie that into the false prophet that appears with the Antichrist, and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. And again, the love of most, is that talking about love towards people? Or is that talking about love towards Christ? It would probably go hand in hand, be either one. But he who stands firm to the end will be saved. And the gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and the end will come. So, now, is that talking about the end of the church age, going into the tribulation? When it talks about, and will be saved, is that, again, the rapture taking them out? But anyway, verse 15 is, I think, clearly now the halfway point of the tribulation. It's that halfway point of the 70th week. So, when you see standing in the holy place, now we've got a rebuilt temple, and Jesus just said the temple's not going to be torn down. So there is, again, you've got now, if you're, Jesus is speaking in 30 A.D. and the temple is standing. The temple will be torn down in 70 A.D. So when you see standing in the holy place, the abomination, that would have to have occurred before 70 A.D. And this is where the preterists put it, that the Romans would have done something to desecrate the temple, and there would have been the abomination of desolation, and that would have been the sign that the final days are here. It cannot be referring to Antiochus Epiphanes' abomination, because that was, you know, 2 centuries before. I think it's talking about a day in the future. So if you're going to put it here, before 70 A.D., during the first 40 years of the church, you're going to have to do that right here and make this fit. Or else this is talking about some event in the future that is yet to happen. It's not Antiochus Epiphanes. It could be here if you're preterist. I'm putting it here, but this is what it says. So when you see, standing in the holy place, the abomination that causes desolation, spoken of through the prophet Daniel. So he says, this is what Daniel was talking about. Let the reader understand. Now again, that's an interesting line. Let the reader understand. If Jesus is saying this, which it's in red letters, we would assume he's saying it, he's referring to the reader. Let the reader of the book of Daniel understand what's being said here. If it's a parenthesis added by Matthew, let the reader stop and think about this, kind of like a Selah in Psalms. Selah, you read all these things, it says Selah, which means stop, let the music play, stop singing, and just meditate on what you just said. So if this is a parenthesis added by Matthew, he says stop and think about this. So again, it's in red letters, and you could go either way. Jesus would just be referring, spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader of the book of Daniel understand this. Or if Matthew's putting it there, he's talking to the reader of his text. Then let, when that happens, when you see the abomination, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the roof of his house go down and take anything out of his house. And again, if you've been in Israel, they've got, you know, in Jerusalem even today, it's common in the Middle East. I mean, you know this. They have roofs. The roofs are not just, you know, pitched like ours, where you go up there once a year and clean the gutters. They have, you know, they have a railing. They go up there and they cook. They sit outside. It's where they spend time. If you're on the roof of your house and you see this happening, don't go down into your house and get some stuff. just take the exit stairs off the roof or whatever, run through your house and get out of town. You don't even have time to go down and collect your stuff. Get out of town. Let no one who is on the roof of his house go down to take anything out of the house. I mean, this is not talking about a crew shingling. Let no one in the field go back to get his cloak. If you're out working in the field, don't go back to town. Go back into the house. Just start running. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers, for obvious reasons. They've got children they've got to take care of. They care about their children. But now you've got to start making decisions. Pray that your flight will not take place in winter or on a Sabbath. Now, that's interesting because, I mean, Jesus says you can pray. Why would he ask you to pray about something that couldn't be altered? It's like, well, if it's on this particular day, meaning it seems like there's some flux in there, which when's it actually going to happen? And then Sabbath, that would seem to be directed towards the Jews who are going to be observing the Sabbath. And again, the Jews have had times where in the Maccabean revolt, I've told you this before, before 165, the Jews are being slaughtered by the Seleucid armies, the Gentile Greek armies that came down, because they figured out all we got to do is attack on the Sabbath, on Saturday, and the Jews would stand there and let us kill them. It was Judas Maccabeus who began a revolt against the Seleucid, says, we're done with this. We're going to fight on the Sabbath. And all of a sudden, things turned around. And the same thing here. On a Sabbath, they wouldn't want it. They could only go walk so far or run so far if they're going to follow the law. For then there will be a great distress unequaled from the beginning of the world until now and never to be equaled again. Now, for me, that wipes out the preterist argument. If this is happening right here, they say that the worst days of the world was 66 to 70 AD. That was the worst. Now, again, yeah, it was very bad if you were living in Jerusalem. If you're a Jew, they're burning your houses, taking you captive, selling into slavery. It was bad. But it's not like it's never been like that before. I mean, cultures have gone through that over and over repeatedly. We may be facing that in the near future in our own culture. So I can't see that that is the worst ever since the beginning of time and never will be equaled again, especially when we're looking at the coming judgments of the wrath of God. That's got to be the worst days. So I just have a hard time buying the preterist argument here that they can allow that verse to mean, you know, 70 AD was, it's never been as bad as 70 AD. Okay, yeah, if you were living there, it was a bad day. But, okay, but anyway, that's something to think about. For then there'll be great distress unequaled from the beginning of the world until now and never to be equaled again. Again, from the beginning of the world, that includes 586 B.C. when Babylon burnt Jerusalem the first time. This is even worse. If those days had not been cut short, no one would survive. Now there's something's going to be cut short. No one would survive, but for the sake of the elect, those days will be shortened. I think you've got to consider this, that God is going to intervene. If the Antichrist were, or whatever the persecution is coming here, whatever's causing this disaster, were allowed to continue, he would have eliminated every elect person. There'll be no believers left on the earth. I think potentially, you've got to at least look at it, that this is between the fifth and sixth seal. The fifth seal, all the martyrs under the altar in heaven, and there, you know, wait until the full number comes in, and then the next thing you see is the sign of the Son of Man appear, and it's time for the wrath, and then the next chapter you've got, you know, those that appeared. In other words, the sign of the Son of Man comes halfway at the point, or somewhere in the halfway point, and stops it and brings the elect off the earth, because if he had not intervened and brought the elect up, there wouldn't have been anyone left at the end when he returned. Every Christian would have been killed. That's one way of looking at it. Again, there's no way you're going to be able to say I'm absolutely right. But the fun part about this, if you want to have fun with it, is to make a suggestion and see how long it stands and who can attack it. For example, I think I just wiped out the preterist argument. It's never been any days worse. Never again. It's going to be that bad. Ever in the history. World War I wasn't as bad. World War II wasn't as bad. Nothing, you know, the atomic bombs weren't as bad. Nothing was as bad as 70 AD. It's like, I think we can top 70 AD. Yeah, you understand? So, I mean, fighting against that. So when I make suggestions, you're going to have to say, could this, you know, is there a way of erasing my suggestion? Not in an argumentative way, not because, you know, you hate me or something, but it's like you're looking for the truth. And preterists, that sounds good. There's good people who believe that, but it's like, wait, I can't accept it because of certain things. And so, anyway. At that time, if anyone says to you, so when you're fleeing, it's the worst days. I mean, it's terrible. If at that time anyone tells you, anyone says, you look, here is the Christ, or there he is, do not believe it. If someone said, well, that's the Christ, maybe it's the Antichrist, that's the Christ, he's here or he's there, here's our deliverer. Do not believe it, for false Christ and false prophets will appear. False Christ, that could be very specifically the Antichrist and false prophets, you know, the second beast, will appear and perform great signs and miracles to deceive even the elect, if that were possible. Now, why is it not possible? Because they're gone. They just got raptured, potentially. Because if that were possible, how can it not be possible to deceive the elect? I can find some very stupid Christians, and it's pretty easy to deceive. It's easy to deceive Christians, especially those who are just following mysticism. So now you've got a false Christ and a false prophet doing miracles, signs, and wonders, but the elect, those chosen by God, are so well educated in doctrine because they've been coming to Generation Word Bible studies that they'll go, no, that's not true. Or they're it's impossible because they've been taken. Somehow the elect cannot be deceived. Again, if that were possible. See, I have told you ahead of time. So, if anyone tells you, there he is, out in the desert, do not go out. Now, why would he be in the desert? That's where you go out to form your armies. When you go out there, that's where the leaders throughout ancient Middle East or even in modern times, the armies form outside the city. The general goes out there. He gathers. You see this in the revolt against David. You can see this in all the way through the Bible. They go out in the wilderness and then they bring their military in and attack the city. So if your Messiah is forming an army out in the desert, don't go out there. He's not going to go out in the desert and form an army. That's not your Messiah. Do not go out. Here he is in the inner rooms. And again, what does that, he's in the inner rooms. What is that? It's like he's in watching TV. He's got his feet up on, he's in a living room somewhere. No, the inner rooms would be the inner rooms, again, adding to this and trying to interpret it. The inner rooms would be he's in the inner rooms of the temple or the sanctuary. He's negotiating. He's in the inner rooms at the White House. He's in the inner rooms negotiating a peace treaty. Is he a military leader out in the desert? No, that's not him. Is he negotiating a peace treaty? No, the Messiah will not be negotiating a peace treaty. The Antichrist will be on the inner rooms negotiating peace treaties. The Antichrist will be out forming a military. This is not your Messiah. If he's got a military in the wilderness and he's got peace treaties going on in the inner rooms, not your Messiah. How will we know? Now, this right here. What will be the sign? Are you going to be in the inner rooms making peace treaties? No. We're going to bring a military from the wilderness? No. What will be the sign of your coming? Here it is. For as lightning that comes from the east is visible even in the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever there is a carcass, there are vultures. There the vultures will gather. Immediately after, so that's the sign of the Son of Man, like lightning visible from the east to west, he's going to appear. Now you're going to see, that's going to be something you want to hang on to, is the great appearing of our Lord Jesus Christ. There's going to be an appearing. And we see that in Revelation. It's the sixth seal. He appears. They can see his throne. They can see the one seated on the throne. Hide us from him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. Now the wrath has come. So that would be, again, I'm tying that together with that. Wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures will gather. And what that's being said is like, these are obvious things. If you see vultures in the sky, that means there's a dead body down here. If there's a dead body down here, look up, there's going to be vultures circling. It's like a cause and effect. When these things start happening, you're going to see the sign of the Son of Man. And when you see the sign of the Son of Man, well, there it is. That's the sign. It's the end. Immediately after this, the distress of those days, that were the worst days ever, which would be this early persecution in the first half of the tribulation. Immediately after the distress of those days, or it could be the distress of the wrath that's going to be poured out. But we read on. The sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. Now that is a direct statement right out of the Old Testament. It's repeated. The concept is repeated. That is basically a poetic phrase for the day of the Lord. When you read this, it's like, what is this day? This is the day of the Lord. This is the day he appears and brings wrath on all the nations. And why is the sun, again, yeah, I struggle with this for years, you know, because the sun will be darkened. Okay, so the sun's gone. the moon will not give its light because the moon is gone. It appears that the heavenly bodies will be shaken. It's like everything's gone. It's like, well, that's an overreading. It's like the whole universe just rolled up and it's gone. That's an overstate, because now you've got to have, now maybe you're going to create a new heaven, a new universe, but there's still things that take place on the earth. If that literally takes place, then nothing else can happen. It's gone. The universe is gone. What this is referring to most likely, besides the fact that it's a statement, a poetic way of saying the day of the Lord, is that when the sign of the Son of Man appears like lightning from the east to the west, it's not just going to be a bolt of lightning, it's going to be a bolt that stays. He is now in the universe, and you can't see the sun. You can't see, I've used this example before. During the day, you can't see the stars. The stars disappeared. They vanished. No, they didn't. Wait until the sun goes down. Well, there they are. They were there the whole time. So the sun is not necessarily going to move, and the moon's not necessarily going to move. The heavenly bodies are not necessarily going to be shaken, although that may be some kind of shaking going on universally. But the concept here is the lightning, the sign of the Son of Man, is so great, you don't even see anything. And again, it goes on. At that time, the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky. There it is. It will appear in the sky. It's going to be in our atmosphere. And all the nations of the earth will mourn. Now, they weren't mourning when the Antichrist was doing his thing. This lines up perfectly with the sixth seal, the sign of the Son of Man, and they all run and hide. The nations will mourn. They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky. Now, if you read Revelation, again, this is something I've struggled with, and I used to understand this, and it may be correct yet. Jesus appears, boom, and like lightning. It's not like just there and hangs in the air. It's like lightning, like, boom, there he is, and boom, he's down on the earth. And it's like that's, I think, too fast. I think the sign of the Son of Man appears because you read in Revelation, they mourn, not mourn, they cry out, hide us from him who sits on the throne, and they run and hide in caves and holes in the ground. But as you read the rest of the book of Revelation, they regroup, their armies form, they have wars between each other, the king of the east marches in, and they begin to fight against the one who sits on the throne. And he is pouring out the trumpets and the bowls from his throne there in the atmosphere, wreaking havoc on the earth and the nations. So this second coming, again, be careful, don't let me say something wrong, but this second coming isn't just all of a sudden we're going along a normal day and suddenly, boom, there's a huge bolt of lightning. It's like, whoa, something, was that a meteor or what? No, Jesus just landed on the Mount of Olives. It's like, it's the millennium. That's not how it's going to happen, potentially. He's going to appear. They're going to recognize we're in battle formation, or he is in battle formation, and he begins to judge. The church is gone. Israel's being protected for a time and a half. That's 3.5 years. They're being protected during this time as he's pouring out his wrath. Now, it says he's in heaven pouring out his wrath, but you understand where heaven has just come. Heaven has just come into our atmosphere. At that time, the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky. I'll throw this out there. Sign of the Son of Man. Son of Man refers to Jesus. He called himself Son of Man. But what is also interesting to consider is he called Ezekiel Son of Man. Throughout the book of Ezekiel, he says, Son of Man say, Son of Man write, Son of Man go, Son of Man do. He called him the Son of Man. And what did Ezekiel see a couple of different times? He saw the chariot with the cherubim, and on the throne, on the sea of like glass, like blue sea, was one who looked like a man, fire from the loins down, that he could see him, and the man sitting on the throne was talking to Ezekiel, calling him Son of Man. So it goes both ways. The Son of Man is seated on the throne, but what he called Ezekiel from that position, he called him Son of Man. So what the Son of Man Ezekiel saw is what we're looking at here. This is, I think, the appearance of that throne in the atmosphere, and everyone recognizes it. Wouldn't it be interesting? How does the world recognize? I mean, the Revelation says, hide us from him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. They know. Somehow it's clear, like, you know, they know what's going on. Even those who are denying him. Maybe it's because we've been proclaiming it. For 3.5 years during that persecution, the church was telling you, this is what's coming, this is what's coming. And one day it happens, it's like, this is it. This is what everybody we killed was telling us, because we're going to proclaim the coming of the kingdom. And that's one of the things we proclaim. they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. This is the nations. And he will send his angels. You can't beat this stuff. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other. Now, what is that? My friends, that's the rapture. When the sign of the Son of Man appears, he cuts the day short. He raptures his church up, and the nations see it. It's like the Jews are sealed, and they go off and are protected, and he begins to pour out his wrath. And who are these elect he's gathering? Well, they're the ones that are being gathered because they're not going to be deceived. Now, learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as the twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. So again, you can see the things they're talking about, the abomination. We don't know when Jesus is coming. We don't know the day or the hour, but he says very clearly, just like when the vultures gather, there's a carcass. When you see these things, when you start seeing the abomination, you start seeing all these, this persecution, all the things he's talking about, you know it's close. But he's telling you right here, I think he's going to tell you, It's not here. There's going to be wars and rumors of war. Not every time there's a famine or an earthquake or a war or a rumor of war. It must be the end times. He's telling us very clearly, there's going to take a while for these things to happen. When you start seeing these things, the abomination in the temple, the other things that are mentioned here, you're going to know these days are near. And then he goes on to talk some more there again. The rest of chapter 24 continues with that theme. Chapter 25 is going to give you some parables if you want more detail, and we would like to do that. If we're studying end times in detail, we'd like to do that. Then you end up with a sheep and goat judgment in chapter 25, verse 31. And so chapter 24 and 25, you got some parables in chapter 25 that explain the things in there in chapter 24. Yes. Right, yep.
And distinguishing from that, the second coming in 29, the day of the Lord and the second coming are the same.
The day of the Lord and the second coming would be the same thing, right.
And the rapture is different.
The rapture would occur at the coming of the Son of Man. When he appears, the church is gathered to him. See, that's the kicker right here, right? Because if you're going to go pre-trib, you've got a rapture, then you're waiting for the second coming. The thing that's here, let's say, and these are questions that need to be asked and comfortably answered, not forced. But here is again that 70th week right here. Here's the halfway point: time times half a time, 3.5 years. Pre-trib rapture, the rapture goes up here. And then you've got a second coming. The model, typical model, the second coming is at the end right here. This appears because the sign of the Son of Man is going to appear somewhere in here. There's the throne right there. And somewhere in here, the abomination that caused desolation occurs here. This, in a sense, is the second coming or the day of the Lord. This is where he's on the earth in battle. But from here, he's got a period of time where he's got the trumpets, he's got the bowls, Israel's sealed and out here, and he's pouring these things out from the atmosphere on those that at first ran and hid from him. Now they're coming out and trying to figure out some kind of offensive attack against him, and you've got a period of time here, which is months, you know, years going on right here. So the rapture would be, at this point when he appears, the rapture takes place here. The Antichrist continues to do signs and wonders. He's continuing to deceive people. And people can be saved during this time period. They can be responding because they got to make a choice now. Israel just got saved. Now people are like, they're following the Antichrist. Now they're seeing this. They're seeing the Antichrist. And their hearts are being set. The difference is the second coming is this period right here, or this is the day of the Lord. Again, day of the Lord doesn't need to be a 24-hour. It can be a period. This rapture, I would put over here. And there's still a coming to the earth, where he's going to come and do battle, coming from Edom on the Mount of Olives. He's coming to the earth, but he's coming first in wrath to judge the nations and then landing there. Okay, ask me a question.
Do you consider the rapture and the second coming the same thing?
Same time, yes, yeah. Right. And see, the typical idea of the rapture in there since the 1800s is the rapture happens here. My markers are all going dead. I've got ink to fill them up. I should have done it earlier. The rapture is here. They describe it in a variety of ways that when you actually start looking at it, it's secret. Nobody knows it. Nobody sees it. And it's got to happen before Israel. But see, when you separate the church and Israel, it happens right here. The church goes and Israel's sealed. So if that even is an argument, this is not, when they build this temple right here and they begin offering, that's one of the big arguments. You can't have the church and God dealing with Israel. God is not dealing with Israel right here. The Antichrist is dealing with Israel right here, giving them the Temple Mount. They've got a treaty with the Antichrist. God is dealing with what's happening to God's people. They're being killed. They're being persecuted during this time period. When God starts dealing with Israel is when he takes his church or the believers up, and Israel sees that, the one they pierce, and they mourn for him, and this is where they get saved. Ask me another question. I'm going to go to Zechariah. That's right here. That's right here. That is the typical right there. Second coming. And here's the thing. The question, he's in heaven for 7 years. No one sees him. No one hears from him. All these weird things are happening. And back here, they said they saw him. The nation saw him. He says the nation's born. If this is, again, I'm not, these are things I've had to argue with myself. So when I sound like I'm arguing, I'm not like saying I'm right. I'm like, I just, you know, I get aggressive sometimes, you know, people say, why are you shouting? That's what I'm thinking, you know. So, in my mind, it used to be that Jesus was up here, and my marker's not working, and then all of a sudden, boom, he's on the Mount of Olives. See? No one knew the day or hour. He's just back. Well, there's no time for that. Why would the nations mourn? I mean, it's like, oh no. It's like, now the next thing is the judgment. Like I said before, we're having a picnic in the Kidron Valley there in the afternoon. It's like, Jesus is back. But there's bunches of things that take place here that are going to take place, you know, the second half of the 70th week. So Jesus will stand on the Mount of Olives. His feet will touch the Mount of Olives. But that doesn't mean he can't appear in the sky months ahead of that.
Next week I'd like you to have a handout with
the... Right, yeah, okay, I've got one. What I need to do is change this chart from Hosea. yeah. Okay, all right. And I need to get markers in there because this, I'm doing nothing but just doing nothing here. So yeah, that's, again, we're talking about an event right here. And so it makes sense for me. For me, things just start falling into place because it's just strange. The nations mourn. What are they mourning from? I mean, he doesn't appear until the last moments of the 70th week. And then they mourn. Then they form their, first they go and hide. Then they're doing war against him. I mean, they go and hide in caves. And then the next moment, they're marching against him in battle. It's like, well, if they go and hide in caves here, and then the Antichrist continues to deceive them, do signs and wonders, you know, to convince everybody, keep following me, we can take this guy. Well, then he's pouring out the bowls, he's pouring out, or the trumpets and the bowls. That's, yes, Marilyn. Right. Right. So right here. Well, first of all, chapter, the sixth seal, he's clearly on a throne. The world sees him on a throne. Right. Right. Yeah, that'd be, now he's getting ready to pour out the wrath. And then he comes and fights and destroys the Antichrist. He's going to go into battle formation by the end. I mean, nothing's changing. In fact, you're giving you more time to get all these things in. Right. And then the actual battle with the Antichrist and all that is right on a white horse. And he's coming out, when he says he's coming out of heaven, well, it doesn't mean it's I mean, it can mean, you know, no one saw it coming. You can't see heaven. All of a sudden, the sky opens up and here he comes. Or the sky opens up and there he is and he's there for a period of time. And then eventually he's going to come out of here and he's going to come to the earth, which is even more terrifying when you see this coming to the earth. Now, again, keep thinking, because the last thing I want to do is give you bad information. Okay, what describes second coming? Are you talking about second coming when the feet hit the... Right, because the right. See, this is the sign of the Son of Man. You know, I'm calling this the... Yeah, if you're going to call this moment at the end the second coming, but this would be his glorious appearing then. It's the day of the Lord. He is now intervening in history. Now an active player, I'm in the air. And it's also interesting that Satan lost his place in the air and was cast to the earth. Because Satan is the prince of the power of the air in Ephesians. But then we just got in reading, he is cast to the earth and he was angry with the woman and went off to pursue her in the desert, in the wilderness, because he was cast to the earth. Because when this appears, it just had a... And then when it talks about the powers of the heavens or the being shaken, you could move from the stars and the solar system to the powers in the heavens, the actual rulers and authorities are shaken and cast down. And that's why this is full of demonic activity, because there's demons and angelic beings are cast down from their place of the hierarchy of the rulers, authorities, and principalities and powers. And that all takes place right here. Now, then people, well, you know, God said we'd be delivered from this. We are. We're going to have to face the persecution. But when all hell breaks loose, if you want to say that, the church is not here. The church is up here, and we will be with the Lord forever because we're in his presence. And then when he marches, you know, with the holy ones, you know, is that the angel? It says holy ones with all of his holy ones. That can refer to angels or it can refer to saints. And we don't know all his holy ones. It's angels. Holy ones are saints. So if he's going to march with angels, we know he's coming back with angels, but it could also mean holy ones would mean the saints are coming back with him. And so we would go up, and there it has. Ask me another question. Yes.
Well, you answered part of that one, but when the Lord appears up there, will everybody at the mid 3.5 years?
Right.
Will everybody see him?
It appears, and let's go. Yep.
Why would, I guess, those who aren't believers still
Right. Kind of like, I mean, like, look, think about Pharaoh seeing sign after sign after sign, and it just kept hardening his heart. This is going to harden their hearts. In fact, you know, well, you can read in Revelation, they've been killing the prophets and the saints. The angels are even saying, your judgment is just, because they don't repent. He's going to give them time to repent, and they're just going to get harder and harder and harder. Thank you. Right, yeah. Well, we the church would be up here. You know, they'd be raptured. The believers are raptured. So we're up here. There are people getting born again, I would think, down here. Even on the day of the Lord, they can get saved. But this is where now you read Revelation now with this in mind. And you can, when it pours out the trumpets and the bowls, with this in mind, you kind of get more of a, you get a different picture of it. It's not just random acts. I mean, there's actual warfare, you know. It's like, like warfare. First, you're going to have the archery, you know, the distance attack, and then you're going to move in for the hand-to-hand combat. I mean, I do have another one here, but I got a blue one. I forgot.
Was going on. I mean, he was not to be in that 3.5 years, but I wasn't seeing it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. This is the persecution. And then right here, he makes it clear that the Antichrist makes it clear. And then this is where that false prophet comes in. There's the mark of the beast and all.
I mean, the mark of the beast.
You got to decide when that comes in here, you know. So, and we'd have to go to Revelation, start, you know, at least making suggestions on when we do that. Any other? Yes, Marilyn, please. Yeah. Thank you for calling it a diagram. Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
It looks like mystery, and I know that's not to me.
Right.
But to say that the rapture is at the same time as the second coming, then the second coming, as you're thinking of the second coming as this appearance in the sky.
I think of it more as that. Yeah, I think of it more as an event. I mean, that's what I'm presenting, right?
Do you see it as maybe the last half of the last 3.5 years? Or do you see it?
That's I don't know. Yeah, because as it says right here, at the halfway point, the abomination takes place. And that's when Israel realizes, Israel's like, whoa, what's going on? And sometime after this, the sign of the Son of Man, because that's when he starts, maybe the mark, he starts now taking, and now the Lord cuts those days short. I'm coming back to get my believers. They're up here, and then the trouble continues. Then Israel, okay, I want to do Zechariah. When this happens, you go past the halfway point. Again, this is not absolute, but I think you got to get past the halfway point. The abomination, now Satan's or Antichrist has revealed himself. Israel's going, what? This is what happened to this? Well, you just got lied to, and you've been played. The church, the persecution intensifies. Because he's not hiding anything now. He's no longer faking peace. He's conquering the world. Is that this time, the sign of the Son of Man appears to cut these days short. And then I'm going to read in Zechariah. I wasn't planning on doing this. I'm in Zechariah. I want to go to chapter. Chapter 14, but that's. Okay, there it is. Chapter 12, verse 10. And again, I'm jumping in the middle of a book. And if you go back to. You know, chapter, and it's part of the prophecy of Zechariah, of course, is Zechariah talking to his day and his reaction that people are giving him, and then also talking about the future. I'll quit with that. But we're in chapter 12, verse 10. And he says, well, look at verse 9. On that day, I will set out to destroy all nations that attack Jerusalem. And I will pour out on the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. See, I will set out to destroy all the nations that attack Jerusalem. This would be it. I will set out to attack that right there. I'm going to grab my cap here. My marker went dry again. I'm going back to Larry's. Okay. That one's dead too for some reason. Okay, so he goes out. He's going to go out. And I will pour out on the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, a spirit of grace and supplication. This is the bringing them back. They will look on me. They will see me, the one they have pierced. Now, how do they see him? Because he just went out and he poured out grace and supplication on Israel after the church has gone up. And he pours out, they'll look and they'll see the one they have pierced. And again, you know, they rejected him. And they'll mourn for him as one mourns for an only child. They'll be like, oh my gosh, no. Because there's the glory they've been talking about. There's the rapture. The church is up there. The Gentiles, including Jews that were believers, they're up there. And Israel's like, this is what we've been waiting for. And there he is. one mourns for an only child, and grieve bitterly for him as one grieves for a firstborn son. On that day, the weeping in Jerusalem will be great, like the weeping of hated Rimmon in the plain of Megiddo. That's probably when Josiah died. The land will mourn, each clan by itself. It goes through and talks about all of them mourning, talking about the whole nation. It's and Paul talks about this. He says, all Israel will be saved. There's a day coming. In fact, it says his goal, and I've told you this before, Paul writes that his goal was to make Israel jealous, that they're going to see something. And even Moses says, the nations will make you jealous. You're going to see the nations make you jealous, telling Israel. And this is when the Messiah finally comes. The nations go up, and Israel's like, oh, what? That's the one we killed. And they're mourning for it, and now they're jealous. Now look in verse chapter 13. On that day, a fountain will be opened to the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to cleanse them from sin and impurity. This is that return we've been talking about. They're going to get born again. They're going to turn to the Lord. On that day, I will banish the names of idols from the land, and they'll be remembered no more, declares the Lord. And then they continue through that. So that's when Israel realizes, and then God seals them, and they go off into the wilderness and are protected for time and a half time. Because they're going to be on the earth during the wrath, but they'll be protected. The church will be gone, but Israel will be protected. So there's your difference. If you want a distinction between the church and Israel, when Israel signs a peace treaty with the Antichrist here, God is not dealing with Israel. They're continuing in rebellion. It's at this point God starts dealing with Israel. And if you want a pre-trib concept of Israel and the church being separate, there you go. The church is gone. God returns it to Israel and pours it out. So there's the very concept, but it fits there instead of being forced back into here where it makes them. Because when they sign a treaty with the Antichrist, that's God dealing with Israel. This is when he pours out the grace and supplication, if that makes sense. Now, what you're looking for, go with me over to chapter 14. What you're looking for is the second coming, okay? Now, I think the Lord appears right here. This is his appearing. I would call this is an event. This is the event. The day of the Lord is an event. But this is what you're looking for right here is this time right there, that moment. And here it is. Chapter 14, verse 1. A day of the Lord is coming when your plunder will be divided among you. This is talking about Israel, Jerusalem. I will gather all nations to Jerusalem to fight against it. The city will be captured, the houses ransacked, and the women raped. Half the city will go into exile, but the rest of the people will not be taken from the city. Why? Because the Lord will go out and fight against those nations as he fights in the day of battle. On that day, his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives. This is his appearing, and he's going to, they're mourning, they're going to pour out the sound the trumpets and pour out the bowls. But on that day, his feet are going to stand on the Mount of Olives. Now, there's many verses. We've also got him coming from Edom. You can't just take this verse separate. You're going to have to put it with all the other prophecies that involve his return. The Lord will go out and fight against those nations. I'm in verse 4. On that day, his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, east of Jerusalem. The Mount of Olives will be split in two from east to west, forming a great valley. There's the river that Ezekiel saw, talking about that, going down through verse 8. Verse 9, the Lord will be king over the whole earth. On that day, there will be one Lord in his name only. The whole land talks about some topographical changes. I could read more of it right there. Okay. I could go on. Now we're into Zechariah. Okay, go to Revelation. It's the sixth seal. Yeah, now see, that's it. This is good. I'm explaining it. Now we go back and read the verse, and all of a sudden it's like, wait, that's not what that verse says. Or, oh my gosh, it's right there in the text. So let's go ahead and read. We're in the seals, chapter 6. Like when I talked about the seals, the first four, that is just historical events. And I think they're going to be specific historical events, began with the manifesting of the Antichrist, because the Antichrist can't manifest fully until the Lamb breaks the seal and allows it to happen. So these are those events. Then we come down to verse 9 of chapter 6. This is the fifth seal. The first four, of course, are the horsemen that come out. Now, what's been going on during those first four seals, during the first half of the tribulation? That would be the time and half the time where the saints are handed over. Verse 9, when he opened the fifth seal, John says, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain because of the word of God and the testimony they had maintained. They called out in a loud voice, how long, sovereign Lord, holy and true, until you judge the inhabitants of the earth and avenge our blood? Now, those martyrs, you could say, are from the tribulation, or they could be for all time, with an intensification here during this tribulation. Verse 11, then each of them was given a white robe, and they were told to wait a little longer until the number of their fellow servants and brothers who were to be killed as they had were completed. So they're just, wait, they're martyrs. But we're going to kill more. There are going to be more martyrs, and they're just wait. God is allowing. It says in Daniel, they'll be handed over to the Antichrist for a time, time and half a time. Verse 12, I watched as he opened the sixth seal. Now, this is what you're asking, Marilyn. There was a great earthquake. Now, again, I can't pass this up without saying it. If this happens, if this actually intervenes into the atmosphere, if the Son of God actually appears, the powers are shaken and Satan falls, it's like you're going to have a gravitational reaction. I mean, you're going to have earthquakes on the earth just because of this. If this is, he's actually entering into history. So then, that's just a side note. I watched as he opened the sixth seal. There was a great earthquake. And again, right here, the sun turned black, like sackcloth made of goat hair. Again, now notice right there. See, I read that for years. And this is really the thing that stumped me back in 2012. And I taught through this, like I said. I even talked about it in the book, Titanic Faith. I taught through this several years. Like, and then just keep going. But I'd always like, this sounds like the end of the world. I mean, this sounds like the end of the world. It's like, a great earthquake, the sun turned black like sackcloth made of goat hair, the moon turned blood red, and the stars in the sky fell to the earth as late figs drop as a fig tree when shaken by a strong wind. The sky receded like a scroll rolling up, and every mountain and island was removed from its place. It's like, oh. And again, this is where you get. Now, this right here, let's stop and give another interpretation. This is where they teach Revelation like a cycle. In other words, the seals talk about the seven-year tribulation. Then we go back and we talk about it again, and some good authors write this way, and now you say the same thing, except you talk about it as trumpets. And then we go back. Now, let me say it again. Now we're going to talk about it as bowls being poured out. And the first, second, third seal are just they're similar to the first, second, third trumpet. It's just the seals. Did you get that? Okay, let me say it again. The trumpets, then the bowls. And so you're just teaching it cyclically. Is that how you'd say the word? And that's what you get that right here. It's like the sixth seal, but it's the end. This is what it looks like on the very last day. Okay, let's go back and start now. Say it again. Now we're going to do it with the trumpets. And I didn't know what to do with that. But if you have the sign of the Son of Man appearing like lightning, like east from the west, you go back and read this. It doesn't say the sun disappeared. It says the sun turned black like sackcloth made of goat hair. In other words, just like we can see, everybody's putting on Facebook all these pictures of the sun right now because of the forest fires. And there's like, you can see the sun. It's funny because you can actually look at the sun because there's so much stuff in the atmosphere. That's because of interference. Well, when the Lord returns and he's there, the sun maybe will still be there, but it's like goat hair. It's like it's covered up. It's like you can barely, it's way, it's over there. So you can, but the moon, it says, anyway, the sun turned black like sackcloth made of goat hair. I mean, it's not gone. You can see it, but it looks like sackcloth made of goat hair. The whole moon turned blood red. The moon's not gone. It's just blood red. It's a different color because of the other light that's being reflected around. And then it talks about the stars in the sky fell to the earth. Now, this, it would be impossible for the rest of the book of Revelation to take place if this is literal. If one star comes to the earth, if one star comes out of orbit, we're all in trouble. So, all of a sudden, the stars in the sky fell to the earth. Now, and again, be careful what I just did. I'm talking about a literal sun, a literal moon. And now the stars are falling. Are we talking about the stars of the universe? Or are we talking about the prince of the power of the air, the rulers and authorities, which are referred to as stars, like the dragon is going to sweep a third of the stars out of the heavens later on in chapter 12. They're talking about angels. Is he talking about angels here? Because the stars aren't going to fall to the earth. nor will it look like they fell to the earth. They'll just vanish. Again, so this could be the angelic, be critical, as late figs drop from a fig tree, meaning when they're shaken by a strong wind, meaning they're old, they've worn out their purpose, they just fall, they're ripe. The sky receded like a scroll rolling up. In other words, all the sky is gone in the sense because you've got the Son of Man there. And every mountain and island was removed from its place. That goes back to the earthquake. If this really happens, you're going to have, you know, tsunamis. You're going to have, whoa, the Son of Man just appeared in the atmosphere, and he's here for real. Okay, now it continues. Then, after all that takes place, the kings of the earth, the princes, the generals, the rich, the mighty, and every slave and every free man, meaning everybody, hid in caves and among the rocks and the mountains. And they called to the mountains and the rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of their wrath has come, or the day of the Lord has come. And now the question, and who can stand? We are in trouble. No one can stand in this kind of, because there he is. So you've got that. That's like lightning from east to the west. There he is. Now, the next chapter, I mean, you can't ask for anything better in the next chapter. The very next chapter that ends in chapter 7, and who can stand? They say, who can stand in this? Well, there's two groups. There's two groups that can stand. The first group, well, let's see, I'm going to do the second group first. After this, I looked, and there before me was a great multitude that no one could count from every nation, tribe, people, and language standing before the throne. Now, remember in Matthew 24, when this sign of the Son of Man appears, what happens next? The angels go out and gather from the four winds of heaven. All of the elect are gathered by the angels. Here, the sign of the Son of Man appears, and everybody hides from it. Who can stand? The next thing you see is on the throne. You've got all these people from every tribe and nation. And then you go down in verse 13. Then one of the elders asked me, these in white robes, who are they and where did they come from? John has enough sense to say, you know. I don't know, sir, you know. And the elder answers John, and he said, these are they who have come out of the great tribulation. They have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore, and it talks about that. With all the talk about the rapture by Paul and us being gathered to him, it's like this has to be talking about being the rapture, because otherwise you've got this rapture that happens somewhere. Here's where the rapture, the people that are pre-trib, here's where the rapture takes place. Chapter 4, verse 1. After the first three chapters, chapter 4 begins. After this, I looked, and there before me was a door standing open in heaven, and the voice I had first heard looking at me, speaking to me like a trumpet, says, come up here, and I will show you what must take place. Ah, that's the rapture. It's like, no, that's John being called to heaven so he can see the vision. I mean, that represents the rapture. Well, how about this over here, where they've come out of the great tribulation from every, that, there's the rapture. And it matches perfectly with Matthew. So that is the rapture. Marilyn, that was an answer to your question.
Yeah, and then I'm thinking to myself, you're calling all of this end-time stuff the rapture. Mm-hmm. And you're calling it an event. Where I'm thinking of it as, a series of events. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean,
yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah, like this is his appearing. And then from here, these things take place. Then at the end of this time period, he's going to be on the earth. And there's a whole, now there's another whole study. So now he's here. What I'm saying is this is what we're waiting for. When this happens, I mean, you're in what, and the better term for the glorious appearing and the second coming may be, if I want to call it an event, is Day of the Lord. So the Day of the Lord includes the glorious appearing, the rapture, the sealing of Israel, the wrath being poured out on the nations, as it always is in the prophets, and then the Lord returning to the earth and establishing his kingdom. That is the Day of the Lord. And these are events that take place in the Day of the Lord. No. No, that's exactly why we're doing this, because we got off on this, you know, a month or so ago, we're asking questions. It's kind of like, and I'm throwing things out there. It's kind of like, so no, that's yeah, and you're welcome. And that's why we're asking questions here. I've already written the book, you know, and I'm learning as I'm going here too. What I want to do is get to Luke 21, and we'll do that next week. But Luke 21 is going to answer the same questions, but it's really going to pack in information. That's why once we went this direction, we don't want to go Luke 21 tonight, because Luke 21 is going to be talking about a lot of information about the early church in 70 AD, because it talks about them fleeing. In Matthew, you saw, it's like God is coming to deliver them. But in Luke, it's very clear that they're supposed to flee, because this is the day that all the judgment from all the prophets is going to come on Jerusalem. It's going to be buried and destroyed. And there's no deliverance. There's no hope in Luke in that sense. Okay. I got to go, and I appreciate you coming and asking questions. Father, we do thank you for your truth. We thank you for your word. We ask that we would handle these things diligently and accept your truth as we continue to find it. We ask that we would continue to manifest your life in our life. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time.